Good Monday morning. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with my co-host, Doug Wells. Doug, it's nice to be back in the booth with you.
It is nice to be back in the booth, and it's nice to be in Park City on such a beautiful weekend.
It was gorgeous yesterday, wasn't it? A great Easter Sunday.
Could not have asked for a better day, better weather. It was just wonderful.
And there were some crazy outfits up on the mountain.
You know, I did not get out skiing. I did actually get out a little bit of mountain bike riding, believe it or not.
So oh, wow.
Spring is coming, so I missed the Easter outfits on the mountain.
Where did you bike? And were the trails muddy, dry? How did it look?
I was just going up the UOP, the road to the UOP, just to get the legs in shape, ready for when the trails do dry out, which is a good point. They're probably still wet for us to be riding on regularly.
Mountain Trails Foundation does a great job updating trail conditions on their Facebook page. We try to share those when we can on the KPCW Facebook page. But they had a pretty lengthy one I noticed this weekend, kind of doing a forecast for the trails. And it looks like we're going to have more precipitation coming our way. It's gray skies right now in Old Town.
Yeah, I was actually expecting to drive into the studio this morning with rain, so I was glad to see it's held off a little bit.
Well, our listeners last week listened to Roger Goldman and myself talk about the NCAA tournament. And, folks, it's ending tonight, 7:20 tonight. Michigan plays Villanova. And I'm sure there are a lot of workers, workplaces and bosses out there who are breathing a big sigh of relief because apparently worker productivity does go down during March Madness.
Yeah, no, it's a fun time, but I know at least in my office place, you know, there has been more talk about basketball than any other time of the year.
And our first guest this morning is Michael Bush. He's the CEO of the Great Place to Work research team, and he has a new book out called A Great Place to Work for All. And maybe a great place for you is where you can chat with your coworkers about March Madness. But what he talks about is how to incorporate the values that are important to your employees and use that to motivate them to make for a better productivity in the work environment. He's going to have some specific details on how to make that happen. The book is really interesting. I'm really looking forward to our conversation with him. He's on the line, and we're going to get to him after we intro our next couple of guests.
Yeah, so our second guest this morning is going to be Kathleen Barlow. She's the president of the Park City Women's Business Network. We're going to talk to her about what exactly that is. They also do some scholarship fundraising, which sounds like a great cause. And she's going to tell us why somebody might want to join the Park City Women's Business Network. And our final guest is going to be Carlene Riley. She is the owner of Uptown Fair Cafe, which actually had its last day in business over the weekend. And we're going to talk to her about that and what's next for her. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Whitney Ryan from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Josh here, owner of Este Pizza, and delighted to support KPCW. Located at 1781 Sidewinder Drive in Prospector, Este Pizzeria offers New York-style pizza with hand-tossed dough, homemade sauces, as well as vegan and gluten-free items. Open daily for lunch and dinner, 435-731-8970 or estepizzaco.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money here on KPCW Radio. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with my co-host Doug Wells, and our first guest is on the phone with us. Michael Bush is the CEO of Great Place to Work. It's a global authority on high-trust, high-performance workplace cultures. He has a new book out called A Great Place to Work for All, in which he talks about how establishing great places to work is not only good for a company, not only good for the employee, but also good for the world in general. It's a really interesting premise. Michael Bush, good morning.
Good morning, Renee, and good morning, Doug.
So what makes a great place to work?
A great place to work is a place where people really want to go to work. They don't dread going to work because they enjoy the people that they work with and they trust the people that they work for. And we've been in the business of measuring that through employee surveys to determine whether or not employees are having a great experience with the people that they work with and whether or not they respect and believe that the people that they work for are fair. And are treating everyone the same way, that trust, which is really what we measure, is the core foundation for whether a place is a great place to work.
What is the new normal when it comes to creating a great place to work? A lot of business owners out there and supervisors and managers of employees might think, you know, I'm clearing my expectations. I pay a great wage. I treat everybody fairly. Shouldn't that be enough?
It should be enough. It just rarely happens. There's often good intention, but managers, leaders, supervisors have blind spots. And it's important for them to find out directly from employees what kind of experience that they're having, especially now with the speed of automation, of artificial intelligence, of using software to replace work. You need employees that are innovating for you, employees that are thinking about ways that your business can become a better business. We call it innovation by all. And the fact of the matter is, probably 60% of working people feel that their leaders are fair, that their leaders are treating everybody with the same level of respect, that their leaders are listening to them, that their leaders care about their ideas for how to make the workplace better, that their leaders are really feeling that they are a person and not just an employee. So for the other 35%, they're having a very mixed experience, which means they have a job, which is the last thing that a leader wants.
Yeah, and for those 35%, obviously those bosses want to get the most out of their team. They want to create a place that's exciting for their employees to work at. Why is it so hard? What are some of the biggest challenges?
I think the biggest challenges are when you're small, it's a little bit easier because you're able to develop personal relationships with the people who you work with and the people who work for you or the people that you work for. Once you get above, say, 25 employees, it starts to get tougher. And you're starting to have to manage and lead in a way where you're getting work done through others. And normally, the first leader or the first promotion of a leader is a person who's really good at getting a specific job done. Maybe they're great at making pizza, or they're great at managing transportation, or they're great at software development. And that leader moves into the role of leading people, but they have no development or training in doing that. We call that person the unintentional leader. And there are a lot of them in the world, outstanding individual performers, but they don't have a way with connecting with employees, setting clear expectations, giving employees feedback, and really making sure that they're having an engaging experience. Learning how to lead and connect with people, which is really listening to people and adjusting your style to find out what people need to really be engaged at work. So that's kind of the first level of leadership. And then you could just think about through your own experience, the leaders that you've had who really, the good leader is one where people say things like, I'm here because of that leader. That leader makes the workplace great. I'm willing to do what's required for that leader. Well, that's a different kind of a leader. That's the kind of leader that we are trying to create more of, that is really good at knowing that you have to make a human connection with people. And if you're able to do that and not treat it as just a transaction, you're going to get the business growth as a result of that.
So, Michael, let's talk about that. I like the way that you kind of laid that out. We talked about the unintentional leader and then the very skilled leader. How do people progress along that spectrum?
The way people progress is, number one, they need some feedback to know. Everybody thinks they're a good leader. Most people feel that they are good at rewarding people, at thanking people, at listening to people. At developing people, at welcoming new hires. They feel like they're good at these basic things that leaders should do. But when you survey employees, what you find is that everybody connects really well with a certain group of people, and they happen to be people who are kind of like them in terms of maybe technical skill, maybe introversion or extroversion. But there's a group of people that they have a mixed experience with, and then a group of people that they don't have a great experience with. The first step is for a leader to find out what employees are experiencing. And we believe you do that through a survey. It doesn't have to be our survey. We believe in ours, but there are other ways of finding out what's going on. And then the leader needs to take that feedback and adjust their style. That's the key. Most leaders keep doing what they're doing, and you know, there's many books written saying what got you here won't get you there. And that's why the business starts to stall and that leader starts to stall. They need to find out what people are experiencing, especially the group of people who are having an inconsistent experience of their while they're at work. And so what we do is try and work with leaders to move them from one stage to the next, to move you from an unintentional leader to be what we call a hit or miss leader, and then a transactional leader, which is the leader who's really good at hitting the numbers, but they have 30% of their workforce that's really looking for the next opportunity. And then the good leader, who was the leader that people are there really because of the leader. And the statistics show people don't quit organizations, they quit leaders. And so when you have a good leader, it's a really valuable thing to have, and the task of leadership is to get more people and each leader to do on their own to be more able and more capable. And kind of the highest level leader is the one that we call, in the seminal chapter in the book, the for-all leader. This leader who has the ability to connect with 85% of the people who work with them and create a really rewarding experience for them that's constant in terms of its feedback and their response. But really the most amazing thing about this leader is their willingness to change. Their willingness to adapt their behavior to meet people where they are and not just have one type of leadership style that everybody has to adapt to.
So, Michael, how does that work from a leadership standpoint? Do you have to be a person of many personalities and that, you know, with an employee A, they respond to this kind of leader, but with employee B, they need a different kind of leader? Does the new leader of today's businesses, do they have to be somewhat Sybil-esque and have multiple personalities in order to get the most out of each employee?
That sounds like a good movie to me, but they don't actually have to change their personality. I think leaders actually need to be more of who they are. But let's say that a leader is really good at driving financial results. A leader is really good at getting things shipped to the customer on time. A leader is really good at hitting their goals and other metrics that are set for them by the business. But 30% of the people who work for that leader don't feel that the leader believes that they have unique ability and thought and ideas on how to make the business better. And people would feel that way because they're not asked. Or when they offer suggestions, they see no evidence that the suggestion that they offered affected a business decision that was made. This is common, and this is what stalls innovation when businesses need it the most. Innovation is in the head of a few people or maybe the entrepreneur running the business, but that just leads to the business stalling out and not growing. In fact, what you need is everybody in the business innovating on your behalf, especially now, or you're simply not going to make it because the demands are you have to do more and more and more for the customer for less and less money. The only way that can happen is through innovation. So what that leader has to learn how to do is how to have a conversation with someone, listen to what they're suggesting, give it some thought, and then even if they're not going to do it, connect back with the person and say, I got your idea. I thought about it. We're not able to do it at this time because we don't have the capital to invest in it. But it's a good idea. If we can generate the capital, then we'll do it. That employee now feels heard, number one, and valued, number two, and they keep generating ideas. And if you don't have all the employees generating ideas, you're just not going to make it. It's just a reality of business today that the speed of innovation and the need for doing things differently has increased dramatically. And it's going to continue to do so over the next 5 to 7 years as software plays a larger role in doing work that people used to do.
Yes, I sound more and more like my father every year when I say, you know, the world's much more complex today. It moves much more quicker than it has in the past. If you're just joining us, our guest is Michael Bush. He is the author of A Great Place to Work for All. And we're talking about leadership and how we can, as leaders, create a better place to work for our employees and for our business success. So, Michael, people are complex. I want to build on Renee's question earlier, her tongue-in-cheek Sybil comment about different management styles. And the reality is different people do react to different stimulus and different types of collaboration with their supervisors. And it's this fact that people are complex that personally I find is the most interesting part about my journey as a leader. Is I really enjoy getting to know people and working with them to figure out, you know, how we can work together to help them be the best version of themselves and do the best at our company. But it is a journey, and it is challenging, and you have good months and you have bad months as a leader. And it can be discouraging early on when young people are wondering, well, do I have what it takes to be a leader? So tell us a story maybe about a leader that you worked with that was facing challenges, wasn't sure that he or she was going to be able to be successful at it, but ultimately learned some foundational skills that helped them.
I think that, you know, we survey over 3 million people every year. So we have a lot of data about people and about their ability to change and why they fear change, which is the reason people don't change is they fear it. They think they're going to lose something that they have or not get something that they want. And so they keep doing the same old thing. And they've had a career oftentimes where they've been successful at doing that. So why change? So, you know, maybe they shouldn't. If you happen to be in a business that needs change, and how do you know? Revenue growth, profitability, losing market share. Customers moving to a competitor who's doing things completely different from you. People who are running magazines that no one's reading magazines anymore. So there's lots of cases where dramatic change is needed and normally on the part of the leader to get innovation. So I think as a leader who feels like maybe I need to change. If you don't need to change, then there's nothing you need to do. But if you need to change, then you need to know the experience that people are having of you. So it's one thing for me to feel like, oh, I'm a good leader. I listen well. I always involve people. People love working for me. But is that true? Well, what we believe is the only way to know is to survey people in an anonymous way, in a confidential way, and ask them skillfully a list of questions so they can describe the experience that they have of the people that they work for. When we do this work, we will have leaders who will say, you know, I'm a very good leader, et cetera, and we'll survey the people and we'll share the results, and they go, wow, I had no idea that was the experience that people were having of me. Because our view of ourselves is different from what people experience. So, The major point here is leaders have to look in the mirror, and they have to see what accurately the experience that people are having. And then when they get that feedback, they have to be willing to make an adjustment. You can't turn someone inside or out. But what we have found is leaders around the world have to do more of two things and less of one thing. This has been statistically proven through our analytics, and not only ours, others are coming to the same conclusion. So these are really minor adjustments that leaders need to make, but they have to make these changes, practice these changes, and make them consistently. You can't just change for a week for people to really have a different kind of an experience.
Well, Michael, you can't tease us on those two things that we have to do more of and one thing we have to do less. Let's talk about those three items.
You're giving it a great build-up, Michael. We're on the edge of our seats here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, what are those things? So for each of us, it's different. Okay. But it comes from about 7 to 9 different things that normally bubble to the top. The first is listening. It's listening, which is something that people, everybody needs to work on. And it's not listening to the words that people say. It's not listening for their intention. It's listening in a way that if you have a point of view, while the person's talking, you're willing to change your point of view. There's a dramatic difference in listening in that manner, but that's where innovation comes from. People think innovation comes from a brilliant person. In a few rare cases, it does. But even in the cases like Steve Jobs, if you study him, it didn't come just out of his brain. It came from him traveling through the world, having very different experiences, and changing his own point of view. That's where innovation begins. And so leaders have to learn how to do that. But most leaders are developed to believe that you have to be decisive. You have to be certain. If you change too often, the people can't follow you. You have to study the analytics and follow the analytics. Well, that certainty creates an inability to change and alter your way of thinking, which is where innovation comes from. So listening isn't just respectful for the other person. It'll actually improve your thinking. So listening is number one. Speaking is number two, how you talk to people. And the key thing that leaders need to do is to talk to people in a way that makes sure they understand that how many chips they put in the chocolate chip cookie, and doing that in a consistent way builds the brand of the bakery so that people can come and get the same cookie every single time. So what they do, they may think they're just dropping in a few chocolate chips. It really matters. It creates a brand that a strategy can be built on for the business. So you have to speak to people in a way that's not only respectful, but that builds them, that makes sure that they understand how their task at hand actually affects the overall strategy of the business. And so these are leadership behaviors, leadership habits. Thanking is another. Rewarding is another. Welcoming is another, a very important one. Celebrating as a group, not just with an individual, including people in the celebration. So these are things that they all look very simple in a way, and they sound insignificant. But when you survey employees in Bogota, Colombia, or San Francisco, California, or Salt Lake City, people aren't experiencing these things in a consistent way. And what eventually happens is they look for leaders who treat them this way. They look for these characteristics and qualities in leaders. And we think the evidence is clear. People are willing to stay at an organization that they don't feel great about if they have a great leader who is treating them in the ways that I'm describing. And people are willing to leave their organization when they hear there's a leader in another organization who treats people this way.
So, Michael, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So that second thing that we need to do more of, the first thing we need to do more of as leaders is to listen and listen with an open mind. And then second, when you said speaking, it harkened back to another guest we had a while ago who talked about don't talk about the what of the business, i.e. how many chocolate chips are in the cookie, but talk about the why of the business and how it helps the brand. And that's just taking the communication, it seems, to another level with the employee that gives them that buy-in. But what do you do when you have an employee who doesn't care about the buy-in, where they say, I'm just showing up, I need to work 40 hours, and I need that paycheck? As a leader, should you try to evolve that employee to be someone with more buy-in, or do you just accept the fact, okay, this is the workhorse, and they have made it clear to me this is all they want, and can I move on, or should I still continue to try to turn that employee around?
I think that you want to try and, number one, not hire that employee. Okay, that's what you want to try and do. And there's something in the hiring process that you're hiring a person based on their technical skills or their capability and not for their values, because you just described a person who just wants a job. And if you fill your business with people like that, that's what you're going to get. And when your margins are compressed and you start to lose market share and you wonder why, it starts with the people. And it's really hard now where the, you know, we've got unemployment at 4.1%. It's hard to get talent. And so there are people. I'm in the talent business, too. I have employees all around the world. It's hard to get people. And so what you want to do is just get a body. But it's going to cost you. So you want to get something in your hiring process, which is one of the nine things, that make sure you have a values match, because you want someone who wants more. You want someone who wants more. And if you everybody wants more, even the person who says, look, I just want my money every hour and to go home and watch the Final Four tonight, you know, or you know, that's all I want to do. That person, maybe that's what they want to do today. They're actually aspiring to more. They actually want to learn more. And so this connection should be made before you hire them. Now, if you've already got them, then you want to see if you can – this is why this personal connection is so important. Can you have a conversation with a person who is there just for the paycheck and find out what more they want to do? And is there a way that you can help get them that through conversation, through maybe we'll put you by the cashier, maybe we'll have you do distribution, through rotating the job? Everybody likes to learn, especially people who say they don't want to learn. So these are the connections that are needed. And the reason is not just to build a person, which, yes, that's a great thing to do. Your business is going to have a lot of trouble if you're not doing this. So a lot of people are looking at the elimination of jobs, which are happening at the rate of 10,000 a week, through automation and through big business shipping things to people's homes. The only way to compete is to get innovation from the people within your business and get people who are willing to, while they're watching the Final Four, get a great idea for how to help your business.
Michael,
which happens in company.
And anyone listening to this interview, one of the first, if they came in late, I want them to know we're talking to Michael Bush, author of A Great Place to Work for All. One of the things you said that's important for leaders to do if they want to start improving their leadership skills, the first thing you said was survey your employees. And you said, with skillful questions, how does a business owner and a leader know how to do that kind of survey? Where do they go for help?
Well, you know, they can certainly come to us and they can run a survey on all their employees for $995. So, which didn't exist 3 years ago. We created a tool for everyone, for all, because we didn't feel like we could say for all if we can only do business with Fortune 500 companies. So we created a tool and a way to do that. So I think most businesses can find a way to afford $995. And our tool has been developed over 30 years of research, and it's used by some of the largest companies in the world, as well as some of the smallest and most successful small and medium-sized businesses in the world. So that's one way to do it. We have competitors also offering cultural assessment tools. I just don't know that you'll find one for $9.95. So I wouldn't try and do it on my own with SurveyMonkey because I would rely on people who have been doing it a while, whether it's us or others, to really find out how you get people to describe the experience that they're having at work and whether or not they are being asked to innovate and whether or not their leaders are treating them with respect, credibility, and fairness, and are treating them, you know, more like a person rather than an employee, and whether their leaders seem to know where the company's going, which we ask them. Do they have confidence in the decisions that their leaders are making? Are their leaders communicating with them, and in what ways and different tools are they using to do that? So, you know, the survey, our particular survey takes about 11 minutes to do on a mobile phone, and you get a lot of feedback through an automated tool to let you know what people are experiencing. So, you know, I would just look for a tool that fits your budget and then look at the results and face the results. Just say, oh, well, that's kind of what they think, and everybody would feel that way. It's really important. It's very difficult. I do this for my business. I survey my employees. I'm always nervous when I look at the results. And I know this business and this work. I'm still always nervous. I try and look at it on a Monday, not a Friday, so I don't wreck my weekend. because what I'm looking at is what I have to do to change. And I've been leading people a long time. But I still have to adapt and change and modify the way that I'm leading to make sure that I'm connecting with millennial employees, to make sure that I'm connecting with people who English is their third language. And I'm able to connect with people who love digital communication and still connect with people who don't like digital communication. So that's the for all leader. We have an additional charge now. This is much like the Industrial Revolution, which people had to learn how to manage through numbers and assembly and production and yield and quality control. It's just this is the digital transformation. So it's not all – if we make it about machines, machines are going to take all the work. But we have to take machines plus humans to really create the kinds of breakthroughs that businesses are going to need, because machines can't do it, but people can't do it alone either. It's the combination, and we think that comes through engaged employees who are willing to innovate and think about your business, you know, while watching Michigan and Villanova tonight.
There you go. Well, that's a great note for us to wrap up on. Our guest this morning has been Michael Bush, author of Great Place to Work for All. His tool is, so he's got the book. He's also got a survey where you can survey your employers for $9.95. Michael, we need to wrap up, but I want to give you a chance to give people the website where they can find out more about that survey tool.
Thank you. They can come to www.greatplacetowork.com.
Awesome. Okay, Michael, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
And stay tuned. Up next, we'll have Carlene Riley talking about Uptown Fair Cafe.
Hello, this is Diane Reinhart with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. With 30 offices throughout Utah, we have been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976 and are proud supporters of KPCW. Our agents are in Summit and Wasatch counties and can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
This is Brooks Arbertson, commercial lender for Mountain West Bank, sponsor of the amazing programming on KPCW. At Mountain West Bank, we offer consumer loan options as well as home loans and business loans in one location. Mountain West Bank, just off Kearns, next to the theaters. MountainWestBank.com, division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Travis Vernon, fly fishing coordinator of JANS and longtime supporter of KPCW. Our fly fishing department and guide service is open year-round and offers a full line of flies and product, including brands like Sims, Sage, and Fishpond. We also rent rods, reels, and waders. Available at the flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or JANS.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Carlene Riley, the owner of Uptown Fair Cafe, which closed actually on March 30th. So, Carlene, thank you for joining us. And I imagine this morning felt a little different than last Monday.
Yeah, last Monday was crazy. I was supposed to be here, and I completely spaced it. I got into work after that big party we had, and it was just a disaster area. So I had to start cleaning, and then I just totally spaced coming here. I'm sorry. But
We knew you had a lot on your plate, no pun intended. So how did the last day go? That was last Friday. How was that? I bet you had
packed.
A lot of fans coming by.
We were packed for four solid days. It was overwhelming almost, and we finally, by the end, we geared up and we did it. It was quadruple what we usually do.
So for our listeners who may not know, Uptown Fair is just a local institution here in Park City. Can you please give a little history of your business? You've been in operation for how many years?
18 years. I started on Main Street, right down the street here. And then, as everybody knows, my building was condemned, and then they found me a spot at the Kimball's Art Center. So I've been there, I think, a year and a half, almost 2 years, I guess.
And you achieved fame for your stance during Sundance, where you said, I'm going to serve locals only, yep. Which definitely made you a locals favorite. How did you come up with that decision?
I'm just sick of sun dancers. I couldn't stand them. I just went, no, I can't serve these people. I'm going to kill somebody. And I just says, that's it. I can't do it.
So what was it about them?
Demanding. I've got a movie in 10 minutes. Could you hurry? Is that organic? Is that, gluten-free? They were just so demanding. And my little place couldn't handle that kind of thing. I'd thrown a lot of people out because of that.
I'm curious. How do you signal that to the Sundancers, which may not be reading the park record, may not be listening to the radio station because they just don't know? So did you actually have to tell people, I'm sorry, this is just for locals this week?
No, I had a bouncer. No, really, I had a big, huge black guy from England. He didn't know anything about Park City. And he took over the job. He was so excited. He got his picture in the paper. Tony was his name. And so he'd, because they all have credentials. And he would say, nope, this is for locals only. And they'd walk away. And people would try to sneak in, do all kind of weird things, because then it really hit that it went out. And so the Sundancers started doing weird things to get in there, taking off their credentials, taking off their black. And I got over $1 million worth of PR off of that.
I bet you did. It's like you're the soup Nazi of Park City or something.
It was in the New York Times. A friend of mine sent me a pitch. The article, it's like, oh, dear. And then somebody on an airplane in Canada, in their airplane, they had a thing about it. So it was worth the PR. And I still don't like them. I tuck them this year, but it's a different group. It was a virtual reality kids, and they were different than the normal.
How did you get started in the restaurant business?
I was a caterer for 12 years and a personal chef before that, so I'd worked in restaurants all my life, so, and I was a good cook. So I was watching Oprah one day, and she says, hey, if you love what you do, you'll always be good at it. And I thought, yeah, I love to cook, so why don't I try it? And I told the story last week about the landlady letting me in, and I was open within 30 days, and I always say, if it's meant to be, it goes forward, and it did.
So you love to cook.
I love to cook.
And you've done it for many, many years.
Many years.
And now you've just shut down your cafe. Mm-hmm. What's next for you?
I'm going to write a cookbook. I think that'd be my next stage. I got to get better on the computer because I've let that go all these years. But, I'm going to do a cookbook. I've got a lot of recipes are my own. I've invented a lot of new recipes, so that will be good. In fact, the tomato soup, it's not my recipe, but I stole it from somebody, but I put other things in it to make it mine, and that's what I do sometimes. I'll look at a recipe, I take out what I don't like and put in what I do like. So
it would be soups, sandwiches. What other kind of recipes are going to be in this cookbook?
Probably just soups. It's funny, we have an egg salad sandwich, and my daughter does that every morning. And she has been probably asked 15 times, will you teach me how to make egg salad sandwich? And it's like, you guys are crazy. You boil eggs, you chop them, add salt, mayonnaise. But they think it's some secret ingredient.
And it's just eggs, mayonnaise, salt, pepper?
Yeah, no pepper.
Oh, no pepper.
No pepper.
No pickle relish.
No, and no mustard either. But isn't that crazy? Do you guys know how to make egg salad?
I do know how to make egg salad, and it's yummy. So you worked with your daughter.
Yes.
I asked what you're going to be doing next. What's she going to be doing next?
She might work for the new people that comes in, to show them the ropes and stuff. And she's really good with people. And she's also a really good nanny, so she might do that. But she kind of gets bored with, staying at home with kids all day. So I don't know. There'll be something for her. I know there will be, so.
Carlene, what was it that led you to this decision to say, I'm done with running a daily restaurant and now I'm going to kick back and do something different?
Health. And I'm 70 and I'm tired and I've got a lot of stuff to do that I haven't done. I mean, that restaurant took up 15 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
any way I looked at it, any way I sliced the pie. And people always get mad at me for closing for 3 weeks. But it's like, hey, I got fridges to clean out. You know, I've got inventory. I've got a lot to do. And people just didn't understand that I was there. I never left that restaurant except for to go to farmer's market.
What was your favorite part about having your own restaurant?
People. Yeah, the people. I'm going to miss that like crazy.
So if someone wants to have you cater maybe a business lunch or dinner or something in their own home, are you open to doing that?
Yeah, I've already, my favorite people, I've already given them, you know, my home number so they can reach me, and I'll do that for them. I love to organize stuff like that and cook, so I'll do that. But
only for your favorite people. Someone's listening right now and they think, Carlene, I want you to come do something.
That,
no,
I decided that years ago. I kissed a lot of frogs on that end. And I said, nope, I just pick all my favorite people to cook for. And I did. And I eliminated all the ones I didn't like. So
you've kind of been on the front edge of Park City as it's changed throughout the years. Anything that you've seen that you've liked as far as how the community has evolved or not liked?
I don't think you want to get me started. I'm very vocal about that, and I could get very political very quick.
We have a few minutes if you want to get going.
No.
It'll take more than that. We need to give you the full hour, huh?
No, you don't want to hear it. That's going to be the trouble. See, at my place, it was all political. We'd all get around and, you know, talk and feedback and... You know, and it was great, and we just, and everybody just really bombed us. Like, well, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? Because we all, you know, it was a community center more than anything. You know, sure, they would eat, but it was, you know, come in, say hi, and what's going on? You know, I'm going to miss that, too, because, like, what's going on in town? I was one of the first to know, and then people would come in and say to me, what's going on? And then I would know. You guys help a lot because I hear the radio first in the morning, so I'm pretty up on my to-date things by the time they get in there in the morning. So that was fun. I was thinking the other day, 9/11. I was at the old place when that hit, and that was one strange day. Everybody, they didn't want to eat. Nobody was hungry. They just all came in. And one guy brought a TV in, and... It was really strange but they just wanted to be together.
That's a huge compliment to you. That's where they went to get that sense of community. They knew their friends would be there.
Yep.
As you said, it's a lot of work, 15-hour days.
Yep.
That's what my father did. And, you know, ironically, my father ran his restaurant until he was about 70.
Really?
Yeah. He lived a little over 80, and he continued to work until 6 months before he passed away. He just found that for him. He liked working hard, and restaurant business is hard. It's obviously kept you young. I would have never guessed when you said you were 70. I was shocked.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that. So congratulations on all those years in the restaurant Park City and the community members that used your place as a community center as a connection are going to miss you. We wish you all the best on your next ventures.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carlene.
Some cookies or something, call me, okay?
And we'll take you up on that.
Okay.
All right, our guest has been Carlene Riley, the owner of Uptown Fair Cafe, which had its last day in business last week, March 30th. Carlene, thank you for joining us. Please stay tuned. Our next guest is going to be Carlene Barlow. She's the president of Park City's Women's Business Network.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits. From business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database, becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
Hello, I'm Bruce Bohm, a partner at the Park City office of Jones Waldo. And pleased to support programming like Mountain Money on KPCW. Jones Waldo continues to grow through tackling our clients' challenges head-on and finding solutions to complex legal issues. More about us at joneswaldo.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Tyler with Columbus Pacific Development, a proud sponsor of KPCW. Our newest residential project, Apex Residences, is a collection of 63 slope-side townhomes and flats located at the apex of Canyons Village at Park City Resort. Information about Apex Residences can be found online at apexparkcity.com or 435-429-APEX.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Kathleen Barlow. She's the president of the Park City's Women's Business Network. Kathleen, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you, Doug. How are you guys?
We're doing well. We're having a fun morning. Great guest. We're looking forward to our conversation. So let's start with what the Park City Women's Business Network is.
So it is a group that's been around since early 90s, and it is several things, but the basis is it's a networking group for women in business in Park City. And we provide, as a group, we provide a space every month for women to get together, to support each other, to use each other in business, to make new friends. We also have educational sessions. We have speakers, things like that. We highlight new businesses every month in our meetings. We try to meet in new restaurants, new coffee shops, things like that to highlight new businesses.
Do you have to be a business owner to be part of the Park City Women's Business Network?
No, good question. No, you don't. Most of our members are working women. They work for themselves and they work for other entities.
And is this an organization that you started, or what's the history of the group?
No, I did not start. I've only been with the group for about 5 years. It was started, and you're going to ask me the question, and I'm not going to remember her name, in the early 90s. And Renee, help me out.
I'm Googling it right now. Here we go. I'm typing.
Thank you. And over the years, you know, it's been basically the same, had the same mission. We also raise money for girls' scholarships at the high school. Any luck?
Bernadette Martinelli.
That's it.
1993.
Yes, thank you. So, in essence, it's been the same thing, but we've just had different leaders and different members, and but we're out there for women.
So let's talk about the scholarship fund.
Yeah, I mean, thank you.
The Park City High School is going to be graduating June 1st.
Yes.
My oldest daughter is going to be graduating,
oh,
which is hard to believe. But tell us about the fundraising. Is this something that the community gets behind, or just the members donate to it, or how do you raise the funds for the scholarship, and then how do you pick the winners?
Okay. So both the community and our members. So our membership dues are $95 a year and $90. $3 goes to the scholarship fund. And then at every meeting, we have opportunity drawings. We have sponsorships. So local businesses will sponsor our meetings. And the sponsorship is $250, and it pays for our refreshments. And the entity goes on our website. We acknowledge them at the meetings, and it's a donation for them. We also have two major fundraising efforts during the year, and we're right in it now. Usually April and May is big for us because we're ramping up to write that check at the end of May. And so we have two. The first is a major opportunity drawing where we get donations from community businesses. So we have two nights stay at Hotel Park City. We have dinner at Shabu. We have brunch at High West. We have a half a day fly fishing from Park City Fly Fishing, and we have a spa certificate for the spa at Hotel Park City. So we actually are starting to sell those tickets this week. There'll be links on our website that you can do that. Tickets are $20 a piece. It's a no-brainer, and it's a great weekend. The second piece is we used to do a Woman of the Year event. And we had people nominate women in the community, and then our members voted. And we decided this year to change that up. We decided that we would have an event that celebrated all women. With what's going on in our country and in our world, we decided that this year we wanted to embrace all women. And so our event is on May 1st, and it is at Stein Erickson. And it's an all-day affair this year. We have a women's-owned business marketplace where local business owners can come and have a exhibit table and talk about what they do. We are going to have a panel of women that are going to talk about their lives and their successes and their challenges. We are also going to have lunch, and then the afternoon is going to be educational sessions where we're going to bring experts in that are going to talk about personal branding, your business, how to take that brand out and communicate it, and then how to kind of wrap that up and have a balanced.
So that's a lot of
process.
Work.
I mean, yes,
for,
it is.
For many years, you guys have had the Woman of the Year Award. You mm-hmm. have the systems and procedures in place. Mm-hmm. You guys have taken on now this very ambitious mm-hmm. Program to celebrate all women. It must have been something that the group felt very strongly about, because one option was kind of tried and true and mm-hmm. easy. The other one was something different. You don't mm-hmm. know if it's going to succeed. Hopefully it's wildly successful. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. What do you think motivated the group to say, let's do this thing that's different this year?
We get a lot of information from our members. They wanted more education. They wanted something bigger. So we said, let's do it. I have a board of 6 members who help me immensely, so it's not just me doing it. So we kind of listened to our members and said, let's change it up this year.
How much will that cost on May 1st?
So if you're an exhibitor, it's $165, and you are part of the lunch and the educational sessions in the afternoon. And if you're an attendee, it's $125. Stein has been very generous and given us the space. So most of the money that we are gathering from these tickets go right to the scholarship fund.
And I have to ask, your dues are $95,
yes.
93 of which goes to the scholarship fund. Why not just the whole 95? It's only $2.
Oh. Well, good point. We have some expenses that we have to pay for our website, those kind of things. So it may be $93.50.
We only have about 1 minute left, Kathleen. I'm sorry we got tight on time here.
That's okay.
What would you like our listeners to know about Park City Women's Business Network that we may not have hit on already?
I would say join if you're a woman in business. It's an enormous support group. Lots of fun. You meet new women. You meet new friends. You can expand your business. And being part of that group also allows us to give back to the girls at the high school.
And your website, PCWBN, for Park City Women's Business Network.org.
Correct.
ORG. How many members do you have?
165.
Wow. Well, good luck on your event for May
1st. Thank
you. We'll put up a link on our website, so if anyone's interested, they can click on that. Kathleen Barlow, president of Park City Women's Business Network, thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design. Love your home.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to My Own Money. Fun conversations this morning. We want to thank our great sponsors. We couldn't do a show like My Own Money without our sponsors. They include Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chambers Bureau, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Development with Viridian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties.
We also want to say a big thank you to our guest, Michael Bush, author of A Great Place to Work for All, Kathleen Barlow, the president of the Park City Women's Business Network, and Carlene Riley from Uptown Fair Cafe. A lot of fun having them in today. And Carlene was supposed to be in last week, Doug, and she forgot. I mean, as she said, she's just been so busy. And she came running in here, and we had all of 2 minutes to talk to her. And as you can tell, 2 minutes was nowhere near enough.
Right, right. It's I'm sure she had a very busy week. And, you know, I really enjoyed our first guest as well, the author of A Great Place to Work for All. And I was really delighted to hear that the survey is under $1,000, which does make it very affordable. I do think, though, a lot of leaders, like he said, you know, you get the results and you kind of have a feel for the culture that's at your firm, but I'm sure there's always some surprises.
If you want to go back and listen to this show, you can always go to kpcw.org, click on shows, click on Mountain Money, and you can hear it. You're listening to KPCW in Park City. NPR News starts right now.